current events,
personal values,
political and social issues,
technology,
wars and tensions.
Join us for the next hour to discuss and learn how the things happening in our world today point to God's Word as signs of the times.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome in to Signs of the Times, our weekly look at Bible prophecy in the world's news for Friday, August 2nd, 2019. I'm your host, Greg Hilt, and if he was a doctor, we would call him a prophetologist, but he's a pastor, so we just call him Pastor Mark.
That works for me.
And Pastor Mark's going to be telling us what is happening in our world this past week. In the world's news, and always exciting in light of God's prophetic word that we are certainly smack dab right in the middle of the end times, the latter days, as the Bible talks about. Before we get into all of that, just a few things to share. This is episode 89 for the podcasters. Our church, Calvary Chapel Knoxville, is sponsoring the Ride for Life and Hope. It is a ride to support Mission 22. It's an organization that is battling in the trenches, so to speak, in the war against veteran suicide. And that is tomorrow.
Yeah.
Tomorrow.
Yep.
If you have a motorcycle of any kind, you are invited to participate in this ride. Registrations from 9 to 10:30 tomorrow. You can go online to our website today at calvaryknoxville.org and click on the Mission 22 graphic if you want to. Or you can register the day of tomorrow at Smoky Mountain Harley-Davidson. And if you're a bike rider, no doubt you know where Smoky Mountain Harley-Davidson is.
And Greg, you don't have to ride. We'll have to
You don't have to.
You can still go and sign up and pay just to give toward this cause.
All the proceeds are going to Mission 22.
It is, which is, as you said, to help suicide prevention. Yeah.
For our veterans. And the church is sponsoring for those participating and being a part of the Ride for Life and Hope, sponsoring a church picnic down there at the Green. Is it the Greenbelt Pavilion?
Is
that what it's
called?
Right
behind the courthouse in downtown Maryville.
Downtown Maryville. So we definitely invite you to be a part of that. It's $20 an entry, so it's $20 that goes to a fantastic cause.
And let me also ask our listeners, because I know we have a lot of believers listening. Please pray for this event tomorrow.
Yes.
We are going to be giving a gospel message at the end of it, Life and Hope. And so be praying for God to bring those he wants there to hear the good news. Be praying that God would anoint me to share that, and that hearts would respond to it. That's our heart, is not only to help give money toward prevention of suicide, but, you know, that's one thing, to stop the bad thing.
Yes.
But they need something to have hope for and something to give them to know they can have eternal life in Jesus Christ. Yeah. So please pray for the outpouring of God's Spirit on that event as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This past Wednesday, something very interesting. A lady by the name, and maybe you know her, Pastor Mark, Helen Montgomery.
Yes.
She was born in 1861. She became the first woman to translate the New Testament from Greek to English.
Okay, that's where I know the name. I've heard the name.
I figured you might have known that name.
Yeah, okay, yes.
Which I did not even know that, for such a male-dominated culture during those times, it's pretty impressive to hear, you know, a woman being involved and being used so greatly in that way.
Yeah.
Especially in the 1800s. So, Helen Montgomery. 1861.
I think that's great.
And this is the first show in the month of August. And I found this interesting. It shows you how ignorant I am, not really realizing, you know, name origins. But we just came out of the month of July, and the month of July is named after Julius Caesar.
Really?
According to what I received. I don't know if it's true or not. Hopefully it's not fake news. And the month of August is named after Augustus Caesar. The Caesar family. So, really, you should be having Caesar salads the month of July and August to celebrate.
You know, I know there has to be a connection. Okay, there's a connection, because I'd always heard these were all named, after gods. But again, you're right. Julius Caesar, July. The Romans named Juno or June after Juno, the queen of the gods. So there's a connection to the gods. I knew there was a connection to the gods. All right. So the Romans named June after Juno, the queen of the gods and the patroness of marriage and weddings. Isn't that interesting? June is the month people get married.
Huh.
July, named after Julius Caesar, as you said, in 44 BC. Previously, July was called Quintilis, which is Latin for the fifth. August, named after Augustus, as you said. So, again, there are a couple there that are named after. I knew that some of them had the gods involved, and some of them have these Caesars. And so it's always good to make sure that I just don't want to say July, because you have to tell the truth. And so July... We have to correct it on the air next week.
Right.
So that's why I was looking to make sure. That's really bad. I know that's bad. But anyway.
But it still makes
great
me laugh.
Trivia stuff. I like
yes.
that. That's fun.
Yes. Okay. So let's get into our main theme for this hour. Speaking of Caesar salads, let's go green.
Yes.
With our first topic.
Yeah. We have two topics I want to discuss here in the first half that are really kind of, both of these could have been pulled into articles in the second half. But I feel like we needed to have a little bit of discussion time on these because these are really interesting and at the forefront right now. The first one here, you know, we know recently, Greg, this whole Green New Deal that's being pushed by the Democrats there in Washington. And whenever we look toward things that are prophetic, we want to look worldwide. We've talked about that. Not just America, although there is a big significance to America alone because we have such dominance in the world. There is that's a point taken there. But we're looking at worldwide movement here. And one of the things the Bible talks about in the last days is a one world government, a one world religion, all walls being torn down, maybe not physical walls, although it could be, but more walls between groups. And there's this whole kind of unity that it says the Antichrist is going to bring in, that really Satan is going to bring in, and the Antichrist is going to rule over all of it in this whole one world gathering conglomerate. So when you see things like the Green New Deal, it gets your attention. You know, some of the things about the American Green New Deal, obviously it would bankrupt America. There's no way it could really be done. I mean, the price tag, somebody, they've put it 93 billion they put the price tag at just for one part of it? Or 93 trillion.
I was going to say it would have to be trillion.
Yeah, 93 trillion is kind of one of the first estimates. And I think that it would probably be even more than that because they're talking about tearing down, you know, all the buildings and rebuilding them with this new kind of efficiency. I mean, it's so out of the realm of reality that it sounds great for a political thing if you're saying, hey, save the planet. But it's just not realistic or possible.
No.
But within it, Greg, and this is interesting, the other day, one of the Democratic candidates said everything that the Green New Deal has everything we as Democrats want, which has I've suspected for a long time. This whole environmental thing is for political reasons. I'm not denying there's going to be weird things in the environment, even some really weird things in the last days. I'm not getting into the science of it. I'm simply saying it's being used politically. There's no doubt about that. And so what it does is, it in this whole package, this Green New Deal, it does things like tear down the borders of countries, tear down the borders among people. It does promote oneness in the sense of governments and even in religion. It gets very, very spiritual. It's like, I mean, there are some very New Agey things in the new Green Deal. So it's something that I think the Antichrist, the spirit of Antichrist is working. Satan's working through that. It's also being used politically, if you will, to further agendas. But what's interesting about it is that now it's happening worldwide. And why do I say that? Because listen to this article here. This is Ursula von der Leyen. Her Green New Deal isn't just a plan for the environment. She is the ambassador for Germany. She's not the chancellor. Merkel's still the chancellor.
Okay.
This is a lady that's on Merkel's in her administration. And she is the European Commission president-elect. She just got elected as president over the European Commission there in for Germany, the representative, you know, to go to the EU. And as they rotate different leaders around the world every year, the EU does that, or leaders in Europe. She's going to be the next leader for Europe and the EU representation of, you know, kind of like our UN here, be the European Union.
What news source, by the way, is that?
Yes, this is from, and I put it on here, and I think I just erased it because I was trying to trim down my article. That was not wise. I apologize.
Pastor Mark, you've got a digital computer. You've got plenty of space there.
I know. I do it for reading.
You're a neat freak.
I do it for reading.
Oh, reading.
But I sent you a copy, so if you were to have a look right now while we're on, you could tell
us.
But
okay.
Either way, if you go online and Google it, you'll find it in multiple news sources. It's not just this, and we do need the news source. Thank you for pointing that out, Greg. I don't want to just put something out there. This is a legitimate news source speaking about the European Union. But let me read some of the article, and while Greg sees if he can find out who the new president over the European Commission will be. But anyway, this week, as a part of her impassioned pitch to the MEPs, Ursula von der Leyen established climate change as the priority for her prospective European Commission, promising to deliver a European Green New Deal. In her first 100 days, she wants to do this, Greg, in her first 100 days, the way a president in America does things, their first 100 days here, able to make Europe the first climate-neutral continent by 2050, but can a deal be agreed, and what's happening, what's going on right now? Again, the deal is good for Europe, they say, and for the world. Did you find out who
it
was?
Yeah, it's at Bruegel.com.
Okay, Bruegel.com. You'll find it in multiple sources.
Yeah, I think that's a German source.
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah, online thing.
It sounds like something.
Yeah.
Give me a Bruegel with cream cheese.
Exactly, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, it kind of gets me hungry.
Yeah, it does.
I wish you hadn't brought it. You know, like hazelnut Bruegel. Doesn't that sound great?
That sounds
or
great.
No, or like a Bruegel could be something that has like those the cream cheese in it and all the bread or the cherry.
You know, I could probably run like a 45-minute commercial right now. Yeah, we just should go run and go get
let's
some.
Let's go to Bruegel's,
okay.
Pick up some
yes.
some bagels and come back. Okay? Anyway,
right.
It's good for Europe because of
yes.
the deep. Here we go. Here's what they say. It's good for Europe because of the deep decarbonization. That happens typically when you get a massage.
Yes.
It represents historical occasion to modernize its economy, revitalize its industry, ensure long-term growth and jobs, and use big words at the same time.
Yes.
It's good for the world because it shows that pursuing climate neutrality, and that's a new one, climate neutrality.
You know, I think the only massage going on is on your wallet.
What is that climate neutrality? Is this their attempt to say you're not affecting, that's what you're not
it's
affecting
net,
the
like
climate at all?
It's like net neutrality.
Okay. Climate neutrality.
Yeah.
I've never heard that term till here.
I'm sure that's what it means.
Yeah. They want it by 2050. It's not technically or economically possible. And not only technically and economically possible, they say, but also politically rewarding. And that's the real key here.
Mm-hmm.
They're admitting this in that they're saying this gets their political goals. This is why I say, look, for Christians, it's not an issue of whether climate change is real or not. God's in control of the earth. That's where our hope is. But you've got to have your eyes open, Christians. This is a political issue. It's being used politically. And this is of paramount importance, the article says, as scientists have shown that achieving climate neutrality within that time frame is the only sensible way to limit global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius and therefore protect the world from more dramatic impacts of climate change. I mean, what would it even do to change it 1.5? I ride motorcycles. I like it a little warmer. I'm not trying to be facetious, but I'm saying, how do we know that having it a little bit warmer is going to really hurt the environment? I mean, people talk about you're melting the ice cap and the water's, you know, when you put ice in a cup and it melts, more water didn't show up. It just changes to a different form.
I got smart thermostats in my home, and they update me every month on what the temperature usage has been.
Right.
But it also gives me the average temperature outside.
Right.
Last year to this year, we've dropped, I think, 1 or 2 degrees.
Actually, cooler.
It's gotten cooler.
Well,
So we've already achieved that, and we didn't have to spend $93 trillion.
The political model, Greg.
I'm sorry.
I guess that
spoils the show, doesn't it?
We need some kind of 30-second delay to erase the blasphemous stuff that you share on the air. Anyway, von der Leyen's plan does not lack ambition. It already contains 20 different policy proposals spanning from the creation of a sustainable Europe investment plan. Sustainable is a big word to this generation. Sustainable Europe investment plan to the introduction of carbon border tax, as well as the potential transformation of the European Investment Bank and its climate bank, and the adoption of a new industrial policy for Europe.
Yeah. Climate bank, I think that's when you deposit money in there. They call it carbon offsetting. Where you contribute to help offset your carbon footprint that you're creating by like flying on an airplane or it's no different than on big luxury vehicles that get like under so many miles per gallon, you have to pay what's called a gas guzzler tax.
Yeah.
Same thing.
And you know, it's interesting. You just brought that up, this carbon footprint thing, because part of this whole Green New Agenda is to lower the population, less babies. And isn't that how they get the baby footprint as a carbon copy when they do those little footprints when they're little?
I don't know how they do it anymore.
Doesn't really affect this, but I find that just interesting, symbolically. But get rid of the babies. That's part of the agenda here to help save the environment. They're putting the planet over people. And God says that the earth was made for man. Man wasn't made for the earth. So they're getting it backwards. Anyway, if structured and implemented with pragmatism, the Green Deal has, due to its comprehensive nature, I emphasize the word nature, The potential to unleash Europe's deep decarbonization and therefore to profoundly reshape the continent's economy would profoundly shape the continent's economy. Just look at the European industrial sector. In a climate neutral scenario, all industries built on burning fossil fuels will have to transform or vanish within 3 decades. You can't do that. You can't take away gasoline and oil. We do not have the technology. Now, if you get within 3 decades and you find a technology that can do the same thing we're doing with gas and oil, that's fine. But you don't have it.
Yeah.
This will affect the regions that generate a large share of wealth from these industries. Ultimately, the people that work in these industries and these regions consume these products. It is clear that only a comprehensive policy encompassing climate, energy, environmental, industrial, economic, and social aspects could face a challenge. Now, there's more to this. I want to talk for a minute, and we'll shift gears. We have two to cover.
Yeah, that's fine.
But did you have something to comment?
No, go ahead, and I'll throw it in there.
Yeah, I'm just saying, here's the bottom line. When it comes to this stuff, I want our listeners to recognize this. Yes, it's being used politically, but that's not our angle. That's just an observation. This is being used spiritually. This, I believe, is going to be the major catalyst. Climate change and Green Deal and all this. I've watched this happen over the years, and I've watched it change. I personally believe this will be the catalyst that Satan uses to unite the world as one under the spirit of Antichrist for all the things it encompasses. Because when you read,
control the world.
Absolutely, Gray, because when you read what they're doing, it's what Revelation talks about the Antichrist will do.
Yeah.
It's going to unite the world in all these areas. And you're right. It's also going to bring control eventually through the mark.
Yes.
That will be on everyone. And, you know, I was reading just today, not in our articles, but just today, that the satellite imagery, there are so many satellites now.
No, we're going to talk about that. That's an article in the second half.
Never mind. The bottom line is we're not only watched, we're going to be controlled. You won't be able to escape.
Yeah.
And for those people who think they're going to run to the mountains and dig some tunnel and hide during the Great Tribulation, you're not going to be able to. They're going to find you.
Yeah.
And the key is if you're here, you don't know the Lord because you've missed the rapture. You need to give your life to the Lord so you're gone on the rapture and don't have to worry about being here. But anyway, keep your eye on this lady. She's very ambitious. One last comment I'll make before we jump to the next thing here, and that is this. She's from Germany. I find that interesting. Here's why. And I mentioned this to Greg before the show started. I want our listeners to be aware of these things. The Bible talks about regional spiritual activity. When the angels fell, it says a third of the angels fell. Satan was over them. They've been divided up into very organized divisions, and they're over certain regions. In Daniel, it talks about the fallen demonic spirit that's over Greece, and then it talks about the fallen demonic spirit that's over Persia, and it lists these demonic beings that are over these regions. And what I find interesting is when you look at these regions, certain regions of the world, you will find a certain characteristic that remains really throughout almost world history. For example, in Greece, I don't know what this demon's like, but it's been sexually perverted and pornographic in Greece since their inception. They're the ones with the Olympics start running nude. Mm-hmm. And I went to Greece here on a mission trip, not a mission trip. It was actually an extension trip after an Israel trip. And Greg, there's so much pornography there. It's literally in the streets. You can't walk down the streets without seeing pornography right there open on the streets. It is horrible. So this same spirit has been there forever and ever. You look at the spirit over Iran. They've had struggles in that region.
Yeah.
Since the earth began, pretty much. And there's a spirit and power over Iran. You look at the regions of Israel, like the Gaza Strip. They used to be Philistine territory. Now, thousands of years later, it is still a problem spot in the world. Look at Syria. Syria, that region. Syria is huge. You go back in history, it's always been that way.
That was bad from the word go.
Back in the biblical days, Syria was stripping people's skin off of them, cutting off their tongues, their ear, their noses, the horrible baby sacrifice. So my point is, you see the same things happening in these regions today that have been happening for thousands of years. And my theory is, although the Bible doesn't say this, and I want to be clear, this is Mark's theory. We do know this. There are regional demons. The Bible tells us that in Daniel. But what we do know is when you see these regions and the same things happening for thousands of years, I believe, Greg, it's because these same demonic forces that are eternal are still controlling it over those areas. They're ruling over. Satan has given them that power. They're doing the same thing in every generation except for the time that God pushes them back through maybe a revival or a nation that's stronger at the moment. And so when you're watching these things happen, why do I bring that up? It was Germany. That region of the world, again, that led the way in the destruction of the Jews and trying to bring in a one world leader through Hitler, who, by the way, said he wanted to rule the world for 1,000 years, which is what Jesus Christ will do. That same spirit, I believe, is now operating through Germany and the Green New Deal in Europe, even though it's happening here in America, and we're seeing it happen in multiple places.
Yeah.
I believe you're seeing some of the same demonic forces that pushed the whole thing that happened in World War II, now pushing the Green New Deal, because Greg is going to lead to another Hitler-esque top leader called the Antichrist. I'm not saying he's out of Germany, but I'm saying that same spirit that is going to rule the world and lead the world, I believe, using the Green New Deal politically to control the earth.
Yeah. You know, I've got a question. It's kind of off topic, but it came up in the context of the article that you were reading.
Right.
When it referenced fossil fuels.
Right.
Now, I was always taught growing up that that meant that the oil,
right,
otherwise referred to as a fossil fuel,
right,
was oil that came from dinosaurs.
Correct.
But yet, every time we found dinosaur bones, we never find an oil deposit.
Exactly.
So, my question is if someone could take crude oil and do a DNA test, would there be any DNA in the oil?
Oh, that is a great question.
Because I think that would be the telltale sign if it really derived from some sort of life existence,
yeah,
of some form. So if there's any listener out there, you can hit us up on our Signs of the Times Facebook page, or you can send us a message on Twitter, Signs of the Times. It's at Prophecy Help is our handle, or go to thesigns.org. If anyone out there has researched this and knows, we'd love to know, because I think it's a misnomer out there. It's not a fossil fuel. God's provided the oil.
I agree. I don't think it has anything to do with dinosaurs. I think it also, Greg, is a political and deceptional idea that's used. And again, when somebody says, well, you don't know the science, well, there's no science that can prove it's from dinosaurs. There is no science out there. And so the same thing is true. There's no science we can prove that it didn't come from that. But it very clearly, when they talk about how long that process would take and how the length of the age of the earth, it couldn't be fossil fuels. I do not believe it is fossil fuels.
No, I mean, anyway, so there you go.
Yeah.
All right. So on to our next one.
Yeah. And we don't have much time, but that's okay, because we have enough time to talk about this. And again, this could have been pushed.
We've talked about this many times on the show before. It's just taken another step.
Yes, we have talked about this. Our listeners will recognize this, but we've moved to a new level. This has gotten real. And what is that? Israel signs a pipeline deal in a push to export gas to Europe. Now, we talked about the mega gas find there in the Mediterranean that they call Leviathan. It's a biblical name of a giant monster there in Job, and which, by the way, is probably a dinosaur, speaking of the dinosaurs. And they named it that. And we talked about how they were now starting to work on getting it out of the ground there, getting a pipeline in the ocean built, which they've done, and getting it now out to Europe, which is going to cause big problems for Russia, who sells to Europe, and is really going to be a huge blessing to Israel because of all the money. And we've been waiting on it to happen. Well, it has happened. They have signed now 12 contracts have been signed, 12 leases, I guess you would say, have been signed to sell gas to Europe. And this is going to create a real situation for Russia, which I'll get to in a minute. Let me read some of the article. This is from the Financial Times. I did keep this one on. I'm not even sure I had it on the other. I now realize I had it on
Financial Times. Yes.
This one's Financial Times. John Reed in Tel Aviv, April 3rd, 2017 is the date on this. So, but again, this was signed, but now it's actually taken place. So this talks about it, but now it's actually has been completed. Israel on Monday formally signaled its ambition to become an exporter of energy to Europe. Now, I think that date must be wrong that I have there. Probably something else, because I was erase words. I apologize on that, because this just happened. Signing a preliminary agreement with Cyprus, Greece, and Italy to pump natural gas across the Mediterranean. The proposed project would be the world's largest, deepest sea subsea pipeline, extending from Israel and Cypriot offshore gas fields to Greece and Italy. It would run about 2,200 kilometers and reach depths of 3 kilometers in places. Yuval Steinitz, Israel's energy minister, said an initial study showed the project was technologically and financially feasible and can be completed by 2025. So they've signed the leases now. This is when they're going to be able to complete the whole project. And I quote, "We are here to start a wonderful project of exporting gas, natural gas from the Eastern Mediterranean, mainly Israel and Cyprus, to Western Europe," said Mr. Steinitz at a ceremony in Tel Aviv, where he and ministers from three other countries signed a map of the proposed route and a joint declaration of moving ahead with discussions to build it. "This is going to be the longest and deepest subsea pipeline in the world. However, the project is likely to face tough questions and possible skepticism from the business community." Now, so this is an article from, I guess, 17 when that was signed. But now, Greg, they've signed the leases. I thought I had the article for the leases. This is the launch of the gas pipeline. Now they've signed those leases. And notice what it says at the end of this. It says Israel and Cyprus are promoting their gas reserves as an alternative to Russia and the North Sea, the EU's two main gas suppliers. Now, here's the clincher at the end of this article. Listen to what it says. the bloc is trying to reduce reliance on Russia, Russian energy. That is, the European bloc is trying to reduce the reliance on Russian energy, and the North Sea reserves are now depleted. So they've been getting it from the North Sea and from Russia. North Sea's now out. They're done. Russia's their only supplier. And they said, we want to reduce Russia so we're not dependent on Russia. Israel's now coming as the hero. They signed 12 leases that'll soon be flowing into Europe. And why is this so significant? Again, for those of you that have been listening, remember the Bible tells us in Ezekiel 38 and 39 that Russia, something is going to happen with Russia that's going to bring them in a battle against Israel. And it says they're going to be coming in to get the reward, to get the spoils, is the way the Bible talks about it, the biblical use of getting the reward that they're going to get from that. Now we see Russia on the border of Israel. We see them linking up with Iran, and the Bible tells us in Ezekiel 38 that Iran and Russia will be coming together into Israel to attack them and try to destroy them. And something is, Iran already hates Israel, so they're going to be motivated to do it. Something is going to happen to pull Russia into it. Greg, this may very well, I know we've said it before, but this may be the hook in the jaw it talks about, hooks in the jaw it talks about in Ezekiel, because it gives a picture of Russia, maybe not necessarily just on their own wanting to invade Israel, but being pulled into it beyond their control. And yes, they've linked up with Iran militarily, but being pulled into this thing now, very possibly by this gas pipeline. I mean, this is huge. It is now real. It's gotten real as these contracts have been signed. And Russia's got to be going, now, what do we do? What are we going to do financially as a nation? Over 60% of their economy is from their natural gas, and the largest part of that sold into Europe. What do we do? How do we now supplement our economy? I mean, they're going to be in big trouble, and they're going to feel the pressure, and they're going to, you know, they're not a country that sits back and waits. They do things. So this is going to be very interesting to watch.
You know, when Ezekiel talks about the hooks, we know the language there speaks of plural, so we know at least more than one.
Yep, that's right.
We don't know how many, but we can think of two. And one of them is Leviathan, which is the natural gas deposit reserve out there in the Mediterranean that we just talked about. And the other is in the Golan Heights of oil, or what some people would refer to as fossil fuel.
That's right. That's right.
but that's also, and I can't remember, we talked about this when that article first broke of the discovery of that.
Right.
But that oil find there is on the same level of unbelievable volume as Leviathan is for natural gas.
That's right.
This is for crude oil.
Well, thing,
but I can't remember.
Could be one of the biggest in the Middle East, in the Golan.
In the Golan.
Right where they are.
Right where they are. So Russia to have crude oil and to have natural gas, because their big export there, at least as far as Europe's concerned,
right,
are those things.
Right.
They're an energy exporter.
Yeah.
So anyway, those could be at least two.
Yeah.
I don't know what the third hook would be, if there's more than
Hooks,
two.
That two would make hooks.
Two would
make
hooks.
But again, it could be more. But it's interesting. I got another article I popped up real quick, Greg, here. This is from July 25th, a few days ago. They're going to start real soon exporting this natural gas from offshore fields of Tamar and Leviathan into Egypt here. It's right on the verge of being shipped. They're getting ready to start. So
Tamar.
Yeah, they named part of the fields, one part of it Tamar, another part Leviathan.
Wasn't that one of David's daughter?
Yeah, and that was the one that Tamar was actually raped.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah, and then Absalom had his brother.
Yes.
Yeah, Amnon put
Amnon
to death
put
for
to
that.
Death, yes.
And, but again,
oh,
this
boy.
Is thing. So, you know, again, in January, the exports to Egypt are expected to reach 7 billion cubic meters. That's over 10 years. So it's starting here. They're going to be flowing the natural gas right into Egypt. These other leases, once the pipelines, when they're ready to go, they'll be flowing. It's beginning. So now what we talked about starting to happen, and now we're going to see Israel just boom economically, because they're going to rake in billions of dollars from this. At the same time, they're going to be sucking everything out of Russia. And I mean, this you couldn't, when you look, okay, what could force Russia to move into Israel? You couldn't write a better script. Russia's hurting financially. They've been already depleted because of their ongoing war in Syria, where they're helping the Syrians and working with Iran.
Not only that, their war in Crimea.
Yeah, and they're not. You're right. They're being exhausted.
Anyway,
they're not getting paid back from Syria. They thought they were going to get paid back, but it looks now they wanted the oil fields there. It looks like somehow America is blocking that, and even America is getting some of the oil from Syria now. I read an article just today. So,
interesting things. What a soap opera that
You're
whole place
kidding.
Is.
It's getting heated over there. Getting heated.
Oh, well, we need, you know what? We need to have that added to our stack of stuff next week.
Okay.
Because that's a huge Ezekiel motivator right there.
We'll
anyway,
get that.
Okay. Well, we've got lots of other things to talk about as Signs of the Times continues right here on WIAM. Don't go anywhere, though. Right now, Israel in the News is up next.
WIAM-LP
101.1 FM, Knoxville.
From the headquarters of the International Fellowship of Christians and Jews in Jerusalem, this is Israel in the News. I'm Bob Sauer. Three Israeli soldiers were wounded on Thursday when a Palestinian who had crossed the Gaza border into Israel opened fire. According to the Times of Israel, the gunman, who was wearing a Hamas uniform and was armed with rifles and grenades, was then shot and killed. This provocation by Hamas led to the heaviest cross-border fighting in weeks, as Israel also struck a Hamas post with tank fire. Meanwhile, the Israel Defense Forces arrested some 15 suspects after a foiled terrorist attack at Joseph's Tomb in the West Bank on Monday. According to the Jerusalem Post, a pipe bomb was discovered near the tomb and neutralized in a controlled explosion prior to the arrival of over 1,200 worshippers at the site. The Jerusalem Post reports that on Sunday, a 69-year-old man was shot several times in the leg in front of a Miami, Florida synagogue. Then on Monday, another synagogue north of Miami in Bal Harbour received a package in the mail containing anti-Semitic threats. Florida police have ramped up security around the local synagogues. U.S. officials on Sunday said that the United States and Israel have successfully completed a series of tests of a new long-range missile defense system. Fox's Allison Barber has the latest from Jerusalem.
The system is a joint Israeli-U.S. development. The test took place in Alaska. The Israel Missile Defense Organization and the U.S. Missile Defense Agency both say the Arrow 3 interceptor missile successfully demonstrated hit-to-kill interceptions of ballistic targets outside of the atmosphere.
As tensions with Iran over several seized vessels in the Persian Gulf remain high, the U.S. has vowed to provide additional security for oil transport. Fox's Lucas Tomlinson has more from the Pentagon.
Wednesday, the U.S. Navy says it kicked off an initial planning meeting for partner nations in the maritime coalition. This comes nearly 2 weeks after Iran seized two oil tankers in the Strait of Hormuz. Their crews remain detained.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu joined with International Fellowship of Christians and Jews President Yael Eckstein on Monday to welcome 121 new immigrants from Ukraine to Israel. Paid for by donations from Christians and Jews, the new Olim, or immigrants, were greeted by Eckstein and Prime Minister Netanyahu, who said, quote, "I am pleased to see children who move to Israel today. The children have a wonderful future here in Israel." Since 2014, the fellowship has brought more than 19,000 immigrants from around the world to Israel. This has been Israel in the News, a weekly news summary presented by the International Fellowship of Christians and Jews. Let us take your prayers to the holiest site in Israel, the Western Wall in Jerusalem. Submit your prayer at israelinthenews.org. I'm Bob Sauer.
Signs of the Times now continues. Here again is your host.
Welcome back, everyone, to the second half of our program that we call Signs of the Times. It's our weekly look at Bible prophecy in the world's news. Today is Friday, August 2nd, 2019, but you could be listening at a later date because we've got a lot of people that listen to this via podcast around the world, as well as here in the United States, and we appreciate all of you taking time out of your busy lives to hear what we've got to say, and more importantly, hear what God's Word is telling us as we read the news headlines. So, we'll go to Israel.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of our articles are not, they're not just confirming what God's Word is telling us, but they're sobering, you know, I mean, we're talking about going through the labor pains that Jesus talks about before the birth of all the wonderful things that God's promised us prophetically in His Word.
Yeah.
So a lot of these things aren't necessarily humorous, but boy, this first article I found very, very funny.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, it was one of those things where I read the headline and I just started laughing out loud. This is from Israel National News. Mahmoud Abbas, who is the Palestinian Authority president, the PA president, he vows to end cooperation with Israel. Here's my question. When did he vow to start cooperating with Israel?
That's why this is so humorous.
Oh, my word. That was so funny.
But again, it's how they try to present it politically. Make it look like we've been trying to do this, but
yes.
Now we're not going to. Well, you never have. That's great, Greg. Palestinian Authority Chairman Mahmoud Abbas announced a cessation of operations in accordance with the agreement signed with Israel and the establishment of a committee to implement a decision in accordance with the decisions of the PLO Central Council Thursday evening. So they're making decisions about decisions, and a decision will be soon made.
I'm going to look up something for that.
Abbas said that the PA would not agree to have dictates imposed on them and to establish a reality on the ground by means of force, especially in Jerusalem. And I quote, "The Israeli moves are illegal and void," he said. He added, "Our hands have been and are still reaching for a just, comprehensive, and lasting peace." No, they're not. This is so much falsehood. But anyway, it goes on. "But it does not mean that we will agree to the existing situation or surrender to the course of the occupation." In other words, here's our reason not to try to have a lasting peace, although we're going to sound like we want one. He goes on, "We will never surrender or agree to live with the occupation, nor will we bargain for the deal of the century, because Palestine and Al-Quds, the Temple Mount, are not for sale or bargaining." He's right. They belong to God. I'll get to that in a moment. "And they're not real estate transactions. There will be no peace, security, and stability in the region and the world if the Palestinian people do not fully recognize their rights," said the PA chairman. It should be noted that the PA leadership, note this, what a statement, Greg, this is, listen to this. This sums everything up you just said.
Okay.
"It should be noted," this is not his quote, this is just from the article, "that the PA leadership, Mahmoud Abbas, had previously made a decision to freeze relations with Israel." They already weren't working with him already when he said this. "But this was contingent on the establishment of a committee to implement the decisions. So the decision about the committee could be made, and the committee could go back to the decision, okay, and the decision would be made about that decision."
All right, I've got the definition for their type of planning. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay,
I'm ready.
"Much work remains to be done before we can announce our total failure to make any progress." So that's planning.
It is.
Is planning.
Here's what's happening. They are talking in circles, doing nothing, because they have refused to work with Israel since they've been back in the land in 1948. They're still refusing to work with Israel. They will never agree to work with Israel until the Antichrist has them sign a deal that will last for 3.5 years during the Great Tribulation period. And so that's going to be, but even that won't last, and it'll be, you know, by sight only for 3.5 years and won't last, and that'll be done. Now let me make a comment about this before we move on. And that is, they talked about they won't make any deals of the occupation and the real estate as if it's a real estate transaction. The Bible is very clear. This land belongs to God. He's the owner. The whole earth belongs to God and the fullness thereof. He owns the land of Israel. He owns the Temple Mount. It is the future place of his throne, and it is the future city of the great king, Jesus Christ, the Bible says. So when he talks about who it belongs to, first of all, we have to all acknowledge, no matter where you stand on the view, the viewpoint, you have to acknowledge this belongs to God. Now, since it belongs to God, he has the right to give it to whoever he wants. And God says very clearly in his word, over and over and over, "I have given this land," that is Jerusalem, Israel, and the entire region, "to Israel. I've given it to them. I've given it to the Jews. It belongs to them. I gave it to them. It's an everlasting promise that will never fail and never be taken away." As a matter of fact, in Jeremiah, God says more than once, "If the sun and the moon and the stars stop shining, okay, then I've changed my mind about giving that land to Israel. Oh, and if the ocean disappears and quits roaring, then I've decided to give up my promises to Israel about the land and all that I'm going to do with Abraham." So very clearly, God is keeping his promises. Now, it's been delayed because of their rebellion to God. They rebelled, they rejected their Messiah, and now they're suffering the consequences for 2,000 years. But that's about to come to a close. And in the year 2032, it'll be 2,000 years that Jesus died on the cross. And so at that point, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens, because many, again, that believe the Bible literally believe that's a very significant time. We're not setting dates for when things are whatever, but that is interesting, you know, to look at. But the bottom line is that they're not going to make an agreement until this false agreement is there. They never wanted an agreement. They're not going to have it, but God gave it to Israel, and Israel will have it, and they'll not only have that area, Greg, they're going to have all the way over to where we call modern-day Iran is, and all the way down to Egypt. So God has promised a lot to Israel, and in the millennial kingdom, when he comes back, they'll have it all.
Mm, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, well, this is from Breaking Israel News. A top rabbi in Israel says we must build the third temple. Why, how Ezekiel of you?
Yes, and by the way, we've talked about all the conversations about rebuilding the third temple, but this one is a little bit different. He takes a different avenue. He does, and it's very interesting because I think it could get other Jews thinking outside the box. Everybody's waiting for the right moment when the Al-Aqsa Mosque is gone and the political environment changes. But he's taking the approach, Greg, that Nehemiah did, that Ezra did. Like, you know what? We've been sent back. Let's just start building now. We'll worry about the details of all the politics later. And so let's not sit around and wait for everybody to give approval. We don't need the permit. Let's just go. And actually, they were given a permit from the king there, Artaxerxes. But anyway, listen to what it says. The former rabbi of the old city of Jerusalem and one of the leading rabbis in Israel today said in an interview, and this was July 29th, we must do everything in our power to build the temple. Rabbi Avigdor Nebenzahl, I think is how you say that, is an Israeli rabbi, a legal scholar who determines the position of Jewish law in cases of law where previous authorities are inclusive or in those situations where no clear rabbinic precedent has existed. So there's no clear rabbinic precedent, so he basically helps to come up with how we're going to handle this, and this is dealing with the third temple. He is in the head of the of the Yeshiva Seminary, a faculty member at the Yeshiva Hakotel, that is of the Western Wall, and Rabbi the Ramban of the Rambam Synagogue. He used to serve as the chief rabbi of, there's a lot of words in
here.
He used to serve as the chief rabbi of the old city of Jerusalem. Today, the post was taken over by his son, Rabbi, and this is the interesting one, Chizkinyahu Nebenzahl. In a recent interview, the rabbi stated that despite delays by Israel's high court, here's the interesting twist now, Greg.
Okay.
Despite the legal delays, in other words, explicitly stated that we must do everything in our power to build the temple and not wait for it to fall from the sky. Now, don't just sit back and wait for all the legal things to fall in place and everybody in the world to be happy. We need to start moving forward. And it really is almost like in the spirit of a Nehemiah where you just start grabbing the stones and putting them in place. The rabbi emphasized there's never been any sort of ruling from the Jewish sages of the Mishnah that state that the Jewish people should wait for it to just happen or fall from the sky, contrary to what many ultra-Orthodox Jews believe. And by the way, when we were there one year and somebody asked the rabbi, hey, when are you going to build your third temple? That was his point. He said it's going to have to be supernatural intervention where God just, at that point, they believe, remove the Al-Aqsa Mosque and give us our Temple Mount. Now they're saying they don't have to remove it. They can build next to it.
Exactly.
One piece of evidence come from the Midrash, saying when the Roman Empire gave the Jews permission to build the temple, they built it. They didn't wait for it to fall from heaven. The rabbi added that there is a commandment to build the temple, and that's true, even if we can't yet offer sacrifices. He added that question, and by the way, it looks like, Greg, what's going to happen, prophetically it tells us, they're going to start offering sacrifices actually before the temple's built. They'll have the agreement probably to build it, but they're going to already start, it tells us, some 220 days before they actually get into the temple.
Yeah.
He added that questions surrounding the renewal of the temple sacrifices should not get in the way of the third temple being built. Regarding temple sacrifices, the rabbi states, indeed, regarding the sacrifices, there are some halakhic or religious doubts that the sages of this generation should determine a plan of action. In other words, we don't have to have some set guideline for how we do when we do the sacrifices, which is making the point I just made, and that is, it would appear from the scripture that they'll start, once they get the agreement to rebuild this third temple, they'll start right away. They'll put up an altar and they will start the sacrifices immediately, which is what they want, the blood to cover sin.
Yes.
And then they'll be building the temple during that time and put them together for a short amount of time until the Antichrist brings it all to a close.
Yeah. All right, let's go come back to America for a moment. This is from Breitbart.com.
Coming to America.
July 31st here. NATO ally Germany won't back U.S. in the Gulf to avoid war with Iran. Now, first of all, that's a clear violation of NATO.
Yeah.
But there's potential prophetic implications here as we look at the end times.
There is. The U.S. has requested naval cooperation from Germany in the Strait of Hormuz as tensions with Iran escalate, the article says. But the political leaders of the European Union have refused to assist their NATO allies. The German Federal Foreign Office said that Washington has approached them to contribute to a new surveillance mission in the Persian Gulf, but had rejected the appeal, saying there was no prospect of contributing and helping them. This is interesting because German allies, the article says, including the U.S. and U.K., have been attacked in the Persian Gulf. That is, even they've been attacked by Iran in recent months. And under the doctrine of collective defense guaranteed by the NATO alliance, in other words, all of the agreement that's been made in these nations, Germany is duty-bound to come to the aid of its allies if asked. Yet, senior members of Angela Merkel's rebellious leftist central coalition, I added the word rebellious, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Yet, senior members of the Angela Merkel's left-centrist coalition government have made clear working with the U.S. is out of the question. It's Donald Trump. We're not going to help. And until he changes his hair, count us out.
Yes.
Isn't it interesting that Boris, what's the new guy's name over there? Boris, you want to say Boris?
Boris Badenoff?
Yes.
Wasn't that Boris and Natasha?
Yeah. This is a different.
But his squirtle,
the new leader for Britain, his hair is also interesting.
Oh, okay.
I think that maybe hair is kind of for the new world leaders kind of a.
Well, you know, your hair sometimes is interesting.
Yeah, but
Pastor
doesn't
Mark.
Have that world leader.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, I comb mine.
Okay.
Anyway, and the president combs his hair. But this Boris guy, have you seen his hair?
No.
It looks like a college student who's like in a fraternity.
Yes.
And he was up too late.
Well, maybe he was.
He shouldn't be doing. And he's got on his bass weegans and his blue jacket. His shirt's untucked. He barely made it to class. And it's like, you know what, dude, you made it. So anyway, sorry. These are college memories coming back.
Oh, man.
Not for me. I wasn't a fraternity, but seeing the guys.
Of course not.
And no offense to you fraternity guys out there. But anyway. Okay.
Yes.
The bottom line is they said, we're not going to help. We're going to break this treaty. And we're not going to help America.
It's a pretty big thing.
It is a huge statement. Basically, in your face, America, we don't care. Now, what would be the prophetic of significance here? Remember, the whole world's going to unite together, and they're all going to join together. And Europe is uniting right now together. America's the odd man out.
Yeah.
And we know that America's going to be removed from this equation at some point to unite the world.
Well, and I think another prophetic thing's at play there, too, and that's the mystery of lawlessness.
Yeah, you're right. Exactly.
I think that's part of that as well.
I wasn't thinking that way, Greg, but you're
right.
But we're seeing, listen.
Two minds are better than one.
The mystery of lawlessness, you know, it's still just one for you. You have one for me. I'm not helping much. But anyway, the bottom line is, you know, Greg, we talk about the mystery of lawlessness. That's happening across the board around the world as well. So that's a great point. We're seeing it in our nation among our national leaders. We're seeing it in the streets with people throwing bottles of water on policemen and just rebellion everywhere.
Yeah.
We're seeing it now worldwide of saying, you know, we don't care about that treaty. We're not going to do it. Lawlessness, Jesus said, in the last days will abound. We are seeing abounding lawlessness.
Yes. All right, well, let's get to some One World Government news. And you kind of almost jumped on this article earlier.
I did.
This is from CNET.com, dated July 29th. Satellites are starting to watch your every move.
Yeah, this is really creepy. You know, it's one thing to realize we're going to be tracked eventually one day by a mark, the mark of the beast. But now, really, we can be tracked, guys, by satellites. And if you carry a phone or anything that connects to a GPS, you can be easily tracked. But even if you don't have that, they can watch you now from satellite. I mean, Google Earth shows that. You think, well, we can do with Google Earth. Imagine what they can do with their government, cameras and stuff. But the dramatic advances in satellite imaging technology in the last 10 years have privacy advocates worried about a 24-hour surveillance. You should be worried. Right now, U.S. federal regulations help keep things in check. I mean, that's only U.S., by the way. So that while commercial satellite imagery is powerful enough, for instance, to see a car, it is not detailed enough to identify the make and model. So they can, I believe, actually have the technology, Greg, to do that, but they're not allowing it in America. They're keeping them from having that kind of use for just to track us.
Mm-hmm.
Satellite companies say they can keep a person's data separate from any identifying characteristics.
Of course they can.
Sure they can. They just won't. But Peter Martinez of the Secure World Foundation said that doesn't matter. And I quote, the risks arise not only from the satellite images themselves, but the fusion of Earth observation data with other sources of data, he said in an email. Then there's the sheer volume of satellites overhead. Imaging company Planet Labs confirmed that it has 140 imaging satellites currently in orbit. Again, this is just one company.
How
in
do
just
those
America.
Satellites not crash into each other? That's a totally separate subject, but
right,
still, it's crazy
about,
when you think about it.
It's like a satellite highway up there.
Exactly.
The report says this is enough to pass over every place on Earth once a day. That's one company.
Yeah.
One company in America can pass over every place on Earth in one day. What about all the other countries and all the other companies?
And their satellites.
Think about that. I know, it's my point. It's like, this is crazy. He says, again, even with the planet's highest resolution imagery, it remains impossible to distinguish individual people. Car number plates or other identifying information.
Just a matter of time.
You're right. Our imagery is ideal for monitoring large-scale change on a daily basis, includes seeing daily change across buildings and roads, forests, agriculture, etc. Meanwhile, satellite imagery is getting closer to a level that investors and businesses want to exploit. The goal of Mapbox's Charlie Lloyd told MIT Technology Review, it's making a living map of the Earth. In other words, it's getting so technologically advanced, people want to jump in to make the money. Now, let me make a couple of comments about this. Tracy, my wife, when she got her first job coming out of college, she worked for the labs there in Los Alamos for the government, basically the Y-12 of New Mexico. And she worked, it was Y-12, but it was in New Mexico, the labs there, New Mexico labs. Greg, she's an interior designer. Her job description, are you ready for this? Her job description was to design the desks in the buildings to be at such an angle that satellites couldn't look in through the window and take pictures of the screens that the people were working on. Now, think about that for a minute. This was 30 years ago. My point is this. If the government was worried about satellite imagery coming through a window and taking pictures of screens 30 years ago in Los Alamos, and that was my wife's job description, what do you think the technology is today? He says you can't distinguish individual people. I doubt that is true. I believe they can. I believe that they're being limited by the government from doing it. But satellites, I think, have the ability, or they wouldn't even have that in place.
Well, maybe commercial satellites, but it could be military satellites might have that technology.
I think that's the point. And I'll make one other point about this. It's kind of funny.
Yeah.
You think about satellite imagery, you know, when they drive by your house and they do the Google picture or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, we happened to go and see what ours was at our last house. I don't know what the new one is now, but we were like, here we were unloading luggage, kids playing in the yard. That's kind of our Google picture at our other house. It's kind of funny to see.
That is funny.
It's kind of there until we moved. We saw the Google guys driving down our road, either Apple or Google, the other day, and we dove inside and closed all the doors. We didn't want to be forever with our picture out there, you know, whatever, you know. And,
you could have put a give your life to Jesus sign or John 3:16 or
that's
something.
Right, that's
that
right.
way it would always be on there.
That's right.
Now, see?
That's right. That again. See, too late. I wasn't prepared. I wasn't prepared.
I wouldn't have thought of it either.
The end is near.
Listen to Signs of the Times. You could have put. You could advertise for the show.
That's right.
Oh, missed opportunities.
Yeah. Well, what are you going to do?
All right. If you were listening to Israel in the News, boy, there's a lot of growing anti-Semitism in Florida, which we don't have those articles. However, we do have one from jpost.com regarding Turkey's Erdogan.
Yeah.
Whoever is on Israel's side, we are against them.
Yeah, and Turkey is turning more and more anti-Israel, which lines right up with what it talks about.
Prophecy.
Yes,
yep.
Ezekiel 38 and 39 says that Turkey will be one of those attacking Israel.
Yes.
Erdogan, the leader of Turkey, made the comments as he addressed senior provincial officials from the ruling AKP party in Ankara. He said, whoever's on the side of Israel, let everyone know that we're against them. Well, I want to say this, who's ever against Israel, we're against you, and we're on the side of Israel. That's what he said, according to the prayer. We're not against you. Look, let me say this. We want you to know Jesus. We want you to be saved. But you know what? We're standing with Israel. Erdogan made the comments as he addressed senior provincial officials from the ruling party there. I read it again, but that's crazy. It's printing the line twice here on this article. Let's skip that. Erdogan made waves last year when he said that the spirit of Adolf Hitler had reemerged among some Israeli policymakers. How absurd is that? In March, a spokesperson for Erdogan slammed Netanyahu for comments that he made regarding the nation-state law, inspiring Netanyahu to say that the Turkey dictator Erdogan attacks Israel's democracy while Turkish journalists and judges fill the prisons. What a joke.
Well, that's a good point.
That was a very good point. Nevertheless, a recent Channel 12 report said that the Mossad, the Israel's intelligence agency, had helped prevent numerous terror attacks from Iran and ISIS. And Erdogan's party took a beating in mayoral elections in June. Again, that's not looking good for them. This is interesting. The United States said last week it was removing NATO ally Turkey from its F-35 program, the most advanced jets in the world. That is, we're not selling them to them, although we said we would. Because here's why. Because Ankara purchased and received delivery of the Russian S-400
yes.
missile defenses. So Trump said, forget it. You're doing what we asked you not to do because our planes could be shot down. So we're not selling planes to you. And I quote, I would like to once again express that no threats or sanctions, Erdogan said, can prevent us from implementing our country's security priorities. Well, but now you're not going to get the help from the U.S., the F-35s, and God's going to be against you because you're against Israel.
Yes. And that's prophetic.
Yes, it is.
Okay, let's go to a couple of church articles. This first one from ChristianHeadlines.com. Courtship author Joshua Harris falls from the faith. Quote, unquote, I am not a Christian.
Yeah, this is really sad to me. I don't. This doesn't make me angry. This makes me very sad. Joshua Harris, the best-selling author, again, I Kissed Dating Goodbye, as you said, is one of the most popular Christian books in the late 1990s, the early 2000s. Among Christian families and singles who embraced the courtship model. Harris then went on to pastor a congregation, Covenant Life Church, in Maryland. And in mid-July, Harris and his wife, Shannon, announced on social media they were separating. That's sad as
Very
well.
Very sad.
In recent years, some significant changes have taken place for both of us, Harris wrote on Instagram. On Friday, he revealed one of those significant changes. And I quote, the information that was left out of our announcement is that I have undergone a massive shift in regard to my faith in Jesus, he wrote on Instagram. Again, this is just heartbreaking.
It is.
The popular phrase for this deconstruction. The biblical phrase is falling away. By all the measurements that I have for defining a Christian, I'm not a Christian. Many people tell me that there's a different way to practice faith, and I want to remain open to this, but not right now. Harris noted that his views on sexuality had also changed. I specifically want to add this now to the LGBTQ plus and on community. I want to say that I'm sorry for the views that I taught in my books as a senior pastor regarding sexuality. I regret standing against marriage equality and not affirming your place in the church and the ways that my writing and speaking contributed to the culture of exclusion and bigotry. I hope you can forgive me. He's basically saying God was a bigot and because this wasn't his teaching.
Right.
It is God's teaching that says these things are sinful and wrong. So what he's saying is, I'm apologizing to the world for God. Everybody, listen, God made a big mistake, and I'm so sorry that God did this, so I'm apologizing for God. What an insult to God this is. And instead of I Kiss Dating Goodbye, I Kiss Jesus Goodbye might be his next book. And again, I'm not saying this to be mean to him.
It's true.
And he needs to be exposed as a false prophet and those who are leading people astray. And it makes me mad when people blame God. It's one thing for you to say, I'm turning away. But when you start blaming God like he's doing. Anyway, some Christian writer, Grayson Gilbert, actually applauded him for his honesty, but again went on to say that his embrace, this is from Grayson Gilbert at Patheos, said his embrace of a sexual anarchy, that is homosexuality, departure from the men's roles in ministry, etc., is but the cherry on top of his apostasy. So he does acknowledge that he's apostate. Okay. Surely if one departs wholly from all the measurements they have for defining a Christian, it is little wonder they would likewise depart from the biblical sexual ethic or the biblical ethic, Gilbert wrote. So let me just, again, I want to clarify before we move on, Greg. My heart is broken for Josh Harris. I feel sorry for him, and I'm not making fun of him. But again, it needs to be called out when you blaspheme God like that. Go ahead, Greg.
Also, ChristianHeadlines.com is reporting, speaking of the LGBT community, California lawmakers have passed a resolution blaming, quote-unquote, religious people for the high suicide rates in the LGBT community.
Yeah, this is absurd. Let me read some of it, make a quick comment, and we finish the show. Again, in an astonishing bid to have people of faith conform to the pervading progressive culture, the legislators even blame religious individuals for, again, the issues that the LGBT community face. Basically, what happened was they passed a resolution. It's not legally binding now. But they passed a resolution in California that will become legally binding in the direction that we're going that basically says, you know what, you're going to have to go along with the LGBT mindset community or you're going to be in trouble legally. And they're even saying that you're the reason for suicide rates. No, the suicide rates have been in place for many, many years, and the suicide rates are growing on a regular basis in this community, Greg, because it leads to no hope. It is hopeless. You are convicted in your heart that you're living wrong before God. There's no hope about life after this one. And it's a very destructive lifestyle. And so it's not because of the religious beliefs. Listen, if anything, it's belief in Jesus Christ that gives that community hope. We love that community. They need hope in Jesus Christ, even as the suicide rates are rising in the veteran community, and we love them, which is why we're doing this ride to raise money and awareness of that coming up here tomorrow. But, again, two things to note. This attack is basically spiritual, coming on the church for their stand on the word of God. And then secondly, they're trying to divert the real reasons they're committing suicide, and that is they need Jesus, they need hope, and they need life. And that's what we offer here each week on the program, Jesus Christ, who loves you. And if you don't know Jesus and you're empty today, just know this. He loves you. He died for you. He will forgive you of your sins if you'll simply ask him and receive him as Lord. And I'd love to invite you to do that today.
Absolutely. Pastor Mark, thank you. Folks, thank you for listening. We didn't get to our last article about the giant crab slamming high-energy gamma rays into the earth for you seafood lovers out there.
Yeah.
Anyway, but you can go to our website, thesigns.org, and read this article along with the rest of the stuff that we've got posted on our website. So we always invite you to do that at thesigns.org. Have a great weekend, and make sure to come back next Friday at 1:30 as we continue to discuss and learn how the things happening in our world today are pointing to God's word as signs of the times.